The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Kelly Bidlin.
Hey,
what's happening?
Not much.
You good?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm glad that you answered that. And it's not a rhetorical question. You answer it literally. What is happening?
I'm doing swell.
You think to yourself, what actually is occurring at this very moment?
I like our day. Our days start where we just start worrying about the show immediately. So there's really nothing that can happen in your day to make it bad.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
There's no worry.
That happens after the show.
Will Hill joins us momentarily, give all his plays at every sport on earth, NBA and Major League Baseball primarily. Kelly's got some things to say about the truest championship preview. We'll be country clubbing.
Yeah.
As Ice Cube once said, we be clubbing. I think that's what he meant. Jason Weingart from Under a Cloud of Smoke. And then a little later on the show, right before she co-hosts Money Moves with JVT, Stormy will join us in studio. Yes?
Yes.
That's very nice of her.
Will be replacing me.
Hope she's okay after the Knights loss yesterday. Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
Vegas Golden Knights giving up 3 goals in the third period to lose to the Oilers in game 1 of that best of 7 hockey series. And the Caps, who got outplayed by the Hurricanes, eventually lose in overtime. Those are your 2 hockey results from yesterday.
Not a great strategy by the Golden Knights. I suggest not giving up 3 goals in the third period.
Well, you know your
hockey. You should
hockey.
Avoid that.
You know your hockey. We got to start with the National Basketball Association, but let me just get this trade in real quick in the NFL before we do. For those who missed it this morning, if you were not, you know, available to hear things or trapped under a heavy object, as Billy Crystal once said. What was that, when Harry Met Sally, when he said that? The Cowboys have acquired, it appears, George Pickens from the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers finalizing a trade where the Cowboys are going to get Pickens and a 2027 6th-round pick in exchange for a 2026 3rd-round pick and a 2027 5th-round pick. So basically for a 3rd and a pick swap is essentially what it is.
And this escalated quickly this morning, so we're basically, this is done, basically.
Yeah, it's apparently it was, they started talking during the draft, they didn't come to terms, Cowboys stepped it up with a 3rd, and the Pittsburgh Steelers decided to move on, and the first question becomes, if you're Pittsburgh, why would you do this? And remember, this is the franchise that, you know, listen, Le'Veon Bell was the best running back in the NFL, arguably. And they were like, yeah, we're not paying you. You could sit out a year if you want. And that was the end of him in Pittsburgh. And then Antonio Brown, who was arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL at the time. And they're like, we were kind of sick of babying you for all these years. See you later. We'll trade you. And they did. Deontay Johnson, by the way, who was their number one wide receiver at one point. They were just like, yeah, we'll trade you, too, to the Panthers. So is it that surprising that this franchise would take a guy like George Pickens, who is wildly talented, but let's just say isn't the easiest guy to deal with on the field during game days? I don't know about other stuff, but he's problematic at times. And they deal him to the Cowboys in a year now, Kelly, where you just wonder about the Steelers because the incessant wait for Aaron Rodgers continues. Right now, you have rostered at quarterback Mason Rudolph, Skylar Thompson, and Will Howard. Remember, they drafted Will Howard late in the draft. I don't know. You know, this is it. By the way, Pickens moving on from these are all the quarterbacks that Pickens caught passes from. You ready for this?
Oh, boy.
Kenny Pickett, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Mitchell Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph.
I'm actually surprised that's it.
That's actually better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, yeah.
But
in
right
3
now,
years, right?
Yeah, right now the Steelers have Rudolph, Skylar Thompson, and Will Howard rostered. They're waiting on Rodgers. And, you know, Pickens has got to be, in terms of that trade-off, he gets to catch from Dak now. If you're Dave Ross or Cowboys fans, you're probably real happy with this. I will tell you, as a Skins fan, I don't like seeing George Pickens in division, that's for sure. But from a Steelers perspective, like, are you punting on the season here? Will asked me, Will Hill is joining us momentarily, asked me, he's like, what do you think their ceiling is in wins? I go, 8.51 wins. Of course, we know their floor, according to, you know, everything Mike Tomlin does, is 8.50 wins. So
it's incredible. Yeah, as soon as I saw this come down this morning, I just retweeted it. I was like, 9 wins still for the Steelers. It is, though.
Is it even that many, though?
I don't know. Seriously?
And does Aaron Rodgers matter?
Well, and it's
at
it's,
all?
It's,
what are we talking about, even?
Like, are the Steelers getting to a point, because I would have never said this about them before, but are they getting to a point where they're just a little cocky with stuff? Like, they don't need this and they can wait on Aaron Rodgers. Well, they don't need Pickens.
They traded for DK Metcalf. They signed Robert Woods. So they clearly were planning this, right? They clearly had this in mind that this could happen. I don't know. I just think that's their brand. They're not putting up with nonsense. And as far as, yes, the quarterback position is concerned, that's the weird part, right? Where it's like, oh, is this...
And I mean it more that.
Are we wiping out this season? What are we doing? Is Aaron Rodgers... Like, we're not talking about 2015 Aaron Rodgers. We're talking about 2025 Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, who I just want to get the month of birth once again with him, he's 41. He's going to be 42 in December.
Yeah, man.
Tom Brady skewed our brains kind of thing. Like, you just can't. You don't play well at this age.
So, like, one of the other next thoughts I had this morning when I saw this, it's like, are the Vikings back in play a little bit for Rodgers? Like, what, you know, does this open back up things for him?
You called it.
Does this have nothing to do with Rodgers?
What was your trifecta, it's not a love triangle, it's the opposite of a love triangle. Rodgers wants to play for the Vikings. Yeah. The Vikings have no interest in Rodgers. If Steelers want Rodgers, Rodgers has no interest in the Steelers.
Yeah, and then there was Russell Wilson to the Giants involved in there somehow, too.
And Russell Wilson wanted to stay with the Steelers. Steelers weren't a part of it either. Yeah. So anyway, there's the trade this morning. George Pickens to the Cowboys. Pretty big deal for early May, I guess. I didn't see that coming.
I think it is. I did grab his tweet from Fowler this morning, Jeremy Fowler. I think these are some interesting offseason additions by the Cowboys. Like you said, these are high upside players on rookie deals that they've made deals for this offseason. Kyir Elam grabbing cornerback from Buffalo. Joe Milton comes in to that quarterback room, that room you love so much, Gil.
Can't have a building without room.
That's right. And then George Pickens at wide receiver now. I mean, look, they might all be complete busts at the end of the day, but I like these kind of high upside moves by the Cowboys in a division that has gotten much, much tougher over the past couple years.
By the way, a third for Pickens, I get it, there was a pick swap also, but a third for Pickens is a better deal than a seventh for Jonathan Mingo. Remember that trade? Mm-hmm. And a pick swap. So there you go, Jerry. Jerry said he had a substantive trade to announce. There it is. From the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, by the way, have played Super Bowls, multiple Super Bowls against each other, three. So they pull off a trade there. NBA last night. This playoffs is insane. Absolutely insane. Three games in two nights now have been absolute heart stoppers. And last night, the Pacers do it again. They beat the Cavaliers to take a 2-0 lead in their best of seven Eastern Conference semifinal series. Remember, the Cavs were the one seed here, and the Pacers have now taken two on the road. Now, remember last night, we talked about it on the show yesterday. That's why I grabbed the Pacers in the points. That's why I grabbed the Pacers on the adjusted series price. There was a possibility that Cleveland would go without Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and who's the third again? Was DeAndre Hunter.
Hunter, yeah.
And so that's what happened. None of them played. And of course, what happened? Cleveland immediately goes out to a 20-point lead, because that's how this NBA playoffs goes down. They got to a 20-point lead seconds into the second quarter. The Pacers would get it within 8 during the second quarter, but the Cavs led by 11 at the half. Cavs would go back up 20, 81-61 with 6:51 left in the third quarter. They led after 3 by 14. The Pacers would then cut it to 4 several times. They couldn't get past that. But here we go. Remember the final game against the Bucks when the Pacers did the impossible? They were down 7 in the last minute with 40 seconds left, I believe it was. And they came back and won that game. Remember the ball going 5-hole through Gary Trent Jr.'s legs?
After a ridiculous game.
Tyrese just going right to the rack without any defensive resistance, and they overcame that. Well, last night, 119-112, Cleveland with 48 seconds left. Just like in the Bucks game where Green was on the line. AJ Green was on the line for a free throw that he missed for the Bucks. This was a free throw attempt this time by Siakam on the Indiana side. He misses, but Nesmith with a follow up rebound jam to make it 119-114. Nobody boxing out. Then Donovan Mitchell elbowed Nesmith in the face. They didn't call it a flagrant. They only called it an offensive foul. Could have been a flagrant.
Could have easily been a flagrant.
45.9 seconds left. 119-116 with 27.5 left after a Siakam driving bucket. So then it's the Cavs ball. They're only up 3. And then I don't know what Max Strus was thinking, but he sort of threw this lazy inbounds pass. Terrible. And there was Nembhard to pick it off. Terrible inbound pass. You're like, this cannot be happening. So Halliburton, you figure the Pacers with a chance to tie the game. Instead, Halliburton drives. He's fouled by Ty Jerome. He makes the first free throw, 119-117. This is the closing seconds now. He makes the first free throw, 119-117. He misses the second. I don't know what the Cavs are doing, but Donovan Mitchell bats it. Halliburton comes up with his own rebound. He then sort of, the ball sort of caroms outward. He stumbles outwards towards the top of the key. He then is one-on-one isolation with Ty Jerome. He dekes him in like he's going to drive. Jerome leans back. Halliburton steps behind the line, behind the arc. Three-pointer, dagger, 1.1 seconds left. Heave doesn't come close. And the Pacers steal another one. And this is from Jamal Collier, just to put it all in context. What a stat from ESPN Research. Since 1997-98, teams are 3-1,640 when trailing by 7-plus points in the final minute of the fourth quarter overtime. The Pacers this postseason have two of them. Good God.
It's wild, man. It's absolutely wild.
It's incredible.
And the Halliburton celebration afterward, man, he didn't have to take that three. This was not like the conversation with Aaron Gordon from yesterday, right? Where we were kind of joking about the questioning after the game of Aaron Gordon just had to get a shot on.
Yeah.
Halliburton, he knew what he was doing, taking that step back and taking that three.
Overrate this. Pacers now up 2-0. They head back to Indiana. We'll see if who of the three guys the Cavs are going to get back in game three. Pacers now a -205 adjusted series favorite. Up 2 heading back to Indiana. We'll come back. Will Hill will join us. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now you can check out Wes Reynolds' Truest Championship Preview, Greg Peterson's MLB Picks, and this just in, rumor has it that Greg Peterson might make himself available for a numbers game appearances. JVT will break down home court advantage in the NBA playoffs, and later today you can check out Zach Cohen's NBA Best Bets. Dan Karpuk will have his NBA props bets, best bets rather. Jonathan Davis will have his best picks for the NHL playoffs. Right now, you can sign up for our annual subscription. Get 14 months for only $199 with promo code PRO. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Is that true about Greg Peterson?
Yeah. He texted me.
Wow. What a moment.
Haven't heard from him a bit. And
What happened with the sleep schedule?
I have no idea.
His post-college basketball sleep schedule change?
I don't want to guess, but okay. I'll guess. I think he's going to bed later, which means later in the morning.
So he jogs 10 miles in the middle of the night?
I mean, I don't know, but that's the only thing that makes sense, right?
Like that boy crazy.
Like the only reason you would start going to bed from like, instead of at like 6 a.m. And now you're going to go to bed at like 9 a.m. The only reason to do that in the summertime in Las Vegas would be because you're running at night, right?
Kid is awesome.
I don't know though. I know it might be hard just looking at me, but like I can't think like Greg.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I got you.
I don't run like he does.
We get tweets at Beating the Book. James Sott. This is going to be a tough opening segment for me and my Cavs, but I'll take the medicine. Not like I'm not used to Cleveland sports. Sorry about that. Had to be done. Tim Bowers. Yo, is there now going to be a daily segment called Kelly's Spite Bet of the Day? Just asking, no particular reason. Kelly's Spite Bet yesterday was on Barcelona. Lost to Inter 4-3. What a game.
What a game. I mean, what a...
And you bet it because you were angry that you didn't bet something before.
Well, no, I did bet it. I did bet it the week before. I bet it in the first leg. And Inter had like three... It was 3-3 draw.
Yeah. I'm
trying to get all the lingo right.
Yeah.
3-3 draw after the first leg. But it was like every goal that Inter had was like the most miraculous goal that you could ever think of.
Yeah, but it was a spite bet because you were angry at yourself for not doing
so. No, I was angry for losing that bet the week before.
Oh, for losing that. Gotcha.
Yeah, so.
And then JC562076, he says, Warriors, that is all. That's the entirety of his tweet. Well, yeah, that's true, JC. Of course, the other game last night, the Warriors beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. So we have all four underdogs. In the conference semifinals, this has never happened before. All four conference semifinal dogs in game one not only cover, but win outright. And the Warriors do it, too. They beat the T-Wolves last night, and they beat them pretty handily to take a 1-0 lead in that best-of-seven series. But the headline, as everybody knows, is that Steph Curry has a hamstring injury, and he had to leave the game with 8:19 left in the second quarter. Was having a good game, too. 13 points. Hammies are pesky, and you just don't know. He's definitely going to be out game two, for sure, in Minnesota tomorrow night. Who knows, you know, what the Warriors will look like. I think a lot of people are saying they're going to punt, but we don't know what a Butler-Draymond Warriors team looks like. Who knows?
All right, Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, playoff Jimmy, man.
Has dragged worse teams than this
100%.
To wins. So
let's bring in Will Hill, at not the Will Hill, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. He's on the Megapod. He's on Chris Felica's Bear Bets podcast at Fox Sports. And we have something more official to mention also, Will, about VSiN Primetime.
Yeah, VSiN Primetime going to be Thursdays and Fridays with our buddy Matt Heumann starting next Thursday and Friday. I think the bosses at VSiN thought I needed a mentor in terms of my diet. My diet's been slipping a little bit. So not only a co-host, but a mentor with Matt Heumann. So excited for that.
He's a medical marvel.
Lifestyle mentor. Yes. You need that in your life, Will. And Matt is a perfect person for it.
About the Dubs, about the Warriors, Will. They got a shot here. Well, I mean, let's say it's 7 days. Let's say Steph doesn't come back till game six. How does this play out?
You and I are rooting for him, but I don't like this. It doesn't look good, doesn't sound good. And it's not just can you get him back on the court physically for like a game four. I think even two and three is a stretch. I've been doing a lot of reading about it this morning. Sounds like even the grade one hamstring strain is the mildest version. Even that is like a week plus. Let's just say he comes back game four. All the stuff he has to do off the ball, all of the getting open, is re-injury. Is he going to be like 100% Steph? Jeez, this feels like a series that the Warriors were very live in midway through the game. And it's funny, hopefully it's not that bad because he stayed in the game a little bit after and he was jogging and then he just couldn't go. It's not like he went down and couldn't get up. That being said, without Steph, without 100% version of Steph, this feels daunting, I would say, for Golden State. Minnesota, that line just continues to grow and grow in terms of the series price. I think Minnesota, I hate to say it, probably wins the series now. And even Butler, I'm curious what you guys think, what Kelly's think. Do you watch them all regular season? Butler, to me, hasn't looked great. Hasn't looked completely recovered from his glute injury. It's a lot of settling for mid-range jumpers. He's not really exploding, getting to the foul line, getting to the hoop. So I hope I'm wrong. How about the tickets? If you had some inclination, Buddy Hield would lead the game in scoring Sunday night against the Rockets. Game 7 was 80-1, and last night was 100. What if you just woke up Sunday morning and said, you know what? I just got a feeling Buddy Hield's going to lead the games in scoring the next couple of days. You would have, you could have made some money there. Unbelievable. What a couple of days, though, in the NBA. That 24-hour stretch between the Knicks comeback, the Nuggets comeback, and the Bucks, the Pacers-Cavs comeback, the next Pacers comeback that I was on the Air Force. Was me basically for an hour and a half just finding different ways to say wow, and I can't believe what just happened. That's about as crazy a 24-hour stretch in the NBA playoffs as I can ever remember.
I don't know which is the most incredible of them, to be honest with you. Last night's might have been. Last night's felt like they were never in the game.
They were. No. I mean, yeah. JVT texted this to the old Hardwood Handicappers group yesterday. Maybe a little hyperbolic, but said this is one of the best playoffs in the past decade. And I'm like, yeah, it's up there.
It is.
It's gotten there quickly. Remember the first round, there was the one, I guess the Nuggets-Clippers series, obviously they had the Aaron Gordon dunk game, and the Knicks-Pistons. But besides that, it wasn't that awesome.
Bucks-Pacers game.
But now all of a sudden, the Bucks-Pacers last game. But this has been unbelievable.
It's interesting. It's ironic because usually the NCAA tournament is filled with upsets and crazy finishes, and the NBA playoffs is sort of a chalk fest. And this year it's flipped where the NCAA tournament was a snooze fest. It was all the ones. It was a lot of blowouts, a lot of chalk. And now the NBA tournament and the NBA playoffs is all upsets and crazy finishes. So it's weird how it's flipped. And 119-112, Milwaukee, I keep saying Milwaukee because I'm thinking the comeback last week. The Pacers shooting free throws. They miss both of them. If they don't get the tip dunk there and Cleveland gets the rebound up seven, they probably get fouled. They probably make either one or two free throws. They're up eight. They're up nine. The Pacers probably call off the dogs at that point. All right, maybe you throw up one last three. If you make it, maybe you foul. Maybe you don't, or you score and you foul. Maybe you miss and you foul. The game is over if they grab the rebound and they make one free throws. The Pacers are probably not even going to try anymore. And look, it's not why they lost, but I've seen this now three times in the last week with these crazy comebacks. The Bucks-Pacers won, the Cleveland-Pacers won, and OKC-Denver. You got to leave yourself a timeout if you're these coaches. I know you struggle sometimes to get it in. You panic, you call a timeout. You got to leave one in your pocket just in case. You can't put yourself in a position where you're down one a second left and you got to throw a full court shot. You just kind of have to keep one in the back pocket there.
Yeah, it's and all of these teams have to be complicit to get, you know, to just absolutely choke those leads away, right? Boston has to keep chucking up threes. The Cavs just have to keep not boxing out. Like, it's just fundamental basketball. It's like, what are you doing?
So to follow up on that, if you take a step back and look at that fourth quarter last night, Brian Windhorst went over this. Great notes. In the fourth quarter, 26 points allowed in the paint by the Cavs. Allowed the Pacers to score 26 points in the paint. 11 of them second chance buckets off of rebounds. It's just... You take a step back and you go, okay, well, now I know why they lost.
You have to leave the door open. So as far as game, let's just talk about the ones we just talked about. We'll get to tonight's game after the break with Will. Indiana up 2-0. Minus 205 series favorites. The Cavaliers plus 175 on the comeback. We don't know who's playing in game three for the for the Cavs. But I will say this. The Cavs are minus 1.5-point favorites in game three in Indiana. Total remains for the third straight game at 229.5, and both the first two games went over. It didn't matter. It's like I had the under. It's like it doesn't matter. These teams figure out a way to get past that number. What do you think about the Cavs being a tick of a favorite here in game three?
And the first move, the first line I saw was the Pacers favored by a point. So somebody bet the Cavs heavy, I guess, just based on the fact that desperation down 0-2. But it's hard to bet them when you don't know who's playing. And not only we don't know who's playing, and those injuries don't sound like it. You know, Garland with turf toe, Hunter with a dislocated thumb, which, look, I'm not an NBA player, but a thumb seems important. And I don't know, like, the swelling, can that go down in 3 days? They do have a couple days off. It's not like every other day, so that helps. I would only look to the Pacers in game three. This did cross my mind. We almost saw this with Boston, Miami 2 years ago. This could be a rare scenario where Cleveland gets down 3-0, but they get their guys back and they're not necessarily dead for the series. They somehow win game four, home for game five, and then all of a sudden, it's game six and it's a series again. That did cross my mind, but I would only look to the Pacers here on Friday night.
Yeah, it's only the second time that a team that has won 60 plus games lost the first two games of a playoff series before the NBA Finals. So the Spurs of 2017 lost the first two games to the Warriors. Remember, that was the Warriors team that almost went 16-0. They went 16-1 in the postseason. But this is the first, and that was the conference. That was the conference finals, I believe. This is the conference semifinals. So this is sort of unprecedented. So no play.
Last one before we go.
Well, don't
Padres go to plus 1.5. This has been a great umpired series so far, but I like the Padres in this game today.
But Will, stick around. We got more with Will. We got more picks. Will Hill, he, believe me, didn't mean that umpire comment. I got things to say about that next.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander. Kelly's alongside, too. He's behind the glass, though, because a special treat right before she co-hosts Money Moves with Jonathan Von Tobel. The lovely Stormy Bonatoni is here in studio with us. And it wasn't just the Golden Knights who took it on the elbow yesterday, the 4-2 loss to the Oilers. First of all, thank you for being here, Stormy.
Yes, excited to be here. Love a little crosstalk before we come on here next.
A little crosstalk. It's an old radio thing. Crosstalk. But you got hit by a puck yesterday.
Yes. So I, as a former ringside reporter, had never been between the benches until I started doing these national games. And it's an amazing viewpoint. It's very fun. Last night, however, I was sharing the between the bench spot with Louis DeBrusque, who's amazing. And bless his heart, he and the training staff were trying to give me ice and stuff. But he saw a puck coming his way, and from my vantage point, I could only see Louis. I can't see through him. So
your back of your head is to the puck.
No. So I'm Louis here, and then I'm behind him like this. So I'm looking in the direction
you're
of where
looking
it is.
Towards it.
I just can't see it. Louis gets out of the way, and then by the time I see the puck, I'm just worried about, like, please don't knock my teeth out and go to the side. So I've got a nice little dent and swollen bruise.
You did a little show and tell earlier. It's a little purpley.
I think that it's going to progressively get bluer as we go. But it was nice. Mark Stone came up to me and was just like, you're tough, man. And so it made me feel good. I have such a newfound respect, though, as if I didn't already, for NHL players and the way they block shots that are coming at them significantly harder than the puck that came at me. But I mean, they're monsters and they fight through everything.
Other hockey players.
I just got my first bruise. We're ready to go.
before we get your actual thoughts on this, on the on these hockey series and these games, one other thing happened. I'm curious if this has happened to you before. Weren't you doing a sideline report the other night, maybe in Minnesota, correct me if I'm wrong, and then a goal was scored in the middle of your report?
No, a penalty was called.
A penalty was called.
Yes.
But whatever it was significant enough that you had to be cut off in the middle of this. Does this weigh on you every time you're doing a report in a hockey game?
Yes. The game moves so quickly, yeah, and you never want to be the person that ruins a goal call or a significant moment. And so it's like wrap up the thought immediately or just shut up, basically, is the mentality. So you try to be as quick as possible. That's why normally when you see reports from a reporter and not a game analyst in a hockey game, they're coming out of a break or immediately following a whistle, like so that you have a good 25 seconds or so that are built in. But you got to get your thoughts out quick in hockey for sure, much more so than any other sport I've covered.
You could only do that or football. Which would you do?
It's such a hard question. They're such different games.
Sorry.
But I would say because of the climate control and the fun of being in person at the game, hockey. But football is fun and you have more opportunity to tell stories and you really get to hear behind the bench what players are saying and what coaches are getting into with their players. So you get more access in football, but hockey in person is more fun and I don't have to worry about rain.
Stormy playing hurt, her elbow hurts. She got hit by a puck. Everybody have sympathy. All right, so about this Oilers Knights series.
Yes.
Knights are up 2-1. Oilers score 3 times in the third period. They win game 1 4-2. Now the Oilers obviously shift to the series favorite, but not a huge series favorite after the win, but they are nonetheless that with the game in hand. Do you feel, you are a keen observer of the Golden Knights, do you feel like this is a portent of things to come, or do you still feel confident about the Knights?
I think that this is still a series that can go long. I thought this was going to be a pick'em series from the start, so it actually surprised me to see the Golden Knights as an even money dog to kick things off in this series. But I don't blame odds makers or bettors for thinking that way with Edmonton because of the way that no lead is safe. And we saw that evidenced last night in T-Mobile Arena where the Golden Knights have this lead. They score early, and Mark Stone, no less, that top line getting action after the slow start in round one for them. So you think maybe this could be positive momentum to come for them. And then the Edmonton Oilers do what they did throughout the course of the first round, which is rally significantly in the third period.
Yeah.
They're plus 11 in the third periods in the playoffs so far. 5 comeback wins.
They did it to the Kings over and over.
Yes. And for Vegas, sorry to cut you off.
No, no problem.
What was a big standout to me was the lack of the direct north-south game, especially considering the issues that Edmund has had defensively and in net, that you would think if you're fighting through that, you should be able to have shot volume and test Calvin Pickard. And we saw in the series against Minnesota how they dominated shot share. For them to have 17 shots on goal and just one in the second period yesterday was significant and very uncharacteristic. So I do think at least from that standpoint, Vegas turns things around.
Okay. You're right. By the way, I said it wrong because Edmonton was a tick of a favorite pre-flop, minus 115. Now they're a minus 230 favorite in this series. This was the round where all the teams that did not have home ice were the series favorites. One of which was Carolina being a favorite over the Capitals. Carolina beats the Caps yesterday. 2-1 win in overtime. Caps led by 1 in the third. Carolina overcame that. Carolina finished with 33 shots on net compared with just 14 for Washington. Do you feel like this will be as lopsided as that felt yesterday, even though it was only a 1-goal win?
No, not as lopsided as we saw. That said, I do like the Carolina Hurricanes in the series. I actually took the Caps yesterday as a home dog, and we've seen so many of them have success.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, especially in their home building, this is a team that hadn't gotten a lot of respect despite having one of the best regular seasons in the entire league this year, even coming out of their opening round series because of some of the close games. It's like people just forgot that they actually won that set in 5 games. And so it's one of those things where I think that it'll be a more competitive series, but Carolina is the better team. They're bigger. You see the shot share, not only the shots on goal, but the edge in shot attempts was 94-34 for Carolina. And they are kind of this like analytics
brutal
defensive darling.
Yeah.
And they are a team that kind of embodies the character of their coach and Rod Brind'Amour and what he brings. And when they win game 1 under Rod Brind'Amour, 8 out of 9 times they've gone on to win the series. So I think it's Carolina's to win, but I do think that Washington is a good team. I think they're going to win a couple.
94-34
yeah.
Shots. good.
I think Washington at the very least wins one game, but I think they can win two.
Tonight we have a couple, we have a game two and then we have a game one, the last remaining game one. The game two is in back at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, where the Leafs are up 1-0 on the Panthers. Toronto, by the way, up one is just a -115 series favorite now. So just a tick of a favorite, up a game. They have netminder issues though.
Yes.
How do you think this plays out? And did, you know, because I look at Wohl, who replaced Stolarz the other night. His stats are good, but he looked, I mentioned this to Jay Kahn the other day, he looked a little dicey. I'm not the keenest hockey observer, but he looked a little shaky. I don't know how you feel this series goes.
Yeah, gave up 3 even strength goals on 20 shots, but I think also there's something to coming into a game cold versus knowing you're the starter, and obviously coming into today, he'll have that frame of mind. The prep will be a little bit different versus coming in a game, although you would think up 4-1 that you're in a pretty solid situation as
solid.
A netminder. But again, we talk about no lead is safe with the Edmonton Oilers, and you could probably say the same with the Florida Panthers. But for Toronto, it's interesting. This is a team that so many people are talking about, well, this season is different, this year is different. And then you see a collapse like that late in the game with the goaltender issues.
The feeling comes in.
And you start feeling it again. That
I feel it for them.
Yeah.
Like, that's how palpable it is, right? Toronto, who has not won a Stanley Cup famously since 1967. So in the end, you think Florida takes the series?
I do. I bet them +105 to come back in the series. I like Florida in regulation today, +115. Puck line, +180. I didn't play, but worth a look there. And there's even a decent price on them, 3-1 right now to win the Eastern Conference if you want to go that route. I think they're much better than they showed, and now having a backup goaltender that they can try to take advantage of, I think will play to their favor. Sergei Bobrovsky gave up some soft goals.
Yeah, what happened to him?
He's bound to give up a clunker every once in a while. It's just what he does. But larger picture of work, larger body of work, that's not who he is. And so I think he gets back to form also.
By the way, random question. Has nothing to do with anything, but since you mentioned Bobrovsky, it occurred to me. Marc-Andre Fleury, Hall of Famer or not?
Yes.
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 Okay. All right.
Yes.
Dallas at Winnipeg, game one tonight. Dallas, a -170 series favorite. You think this goes Dallas's way?
I do, but I don't think the Jets are as awful as everyone is making them out to
be. They won the President's Trophy.
They have the best goaltender in the world. And I know Connor Hellebuck's postseason numbers are abysmal, and that's a narrative that's going to stick with him. But I feel like there's that potentially he found something in that overtime of game 7 that can maybe inject that much confidence to have him get off to a good start. And say what you want about the numbers, and they're bad. He like doubled up what his season averages were this year in that first round. He got pulled 3 times after never being pulled all season. But he also is great at home, 17-0-1 at home his last 18 games.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, so I think he plays better and kind of bucks the narrative a little bit. Hella bucks the narrative in this round.
I see what you did.
So smooth. I hope for him, just like we're talking about Toronto fans need it. It's like Jets fans just always collapse with Connor Hellebuck.
This is awful for me to do to you, but who's in the Stanley Cup Finals and who wins the Cup?
30 seconds, you give me that? I like the Florida Panthers to get back there. Let's get a rematch of last year. Get Florida and Edmonton, and Edmonton does what Florida did last year.
Stormy Bonatoni, everybody. She took a puck to the elbow, for God's sake. Money Moves, top of the hour with Stormy and JBT. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thank you.